Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Good Friday for those marking Easter holidays. Good morning and welcome to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn. Coming up, why does the Democratic Republic of Congo want the UN peacekeeping mission to be reduced by half?
As we're approaching the national elections, it seems to be more and more obvious that if elections will happen this year, the government is rather interested in not having such a big MONUSCO force in the country, given potential political trouble that may be ahead.
Former captives of Boko Haram in Cameroon share their experiences with DW.
I spent 10 months, 15 days with Boko Haram fighters in a bush. I was later given as the fourth wife to a Boko Haram Muslim.
And the mushrooming of churches in Ghana. In some cases, classrooms have been turned into places of worship.
Sometimes in some places, some chairs and tables are broken down, some classrooms become dirty.
These stories, plus a look at how Uganda's opposition figure Kizza Besigye is faring on and a house arrest more than 1 month after the elections. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Critical juncture. That's how the UN describes the political situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo as the country prepares for elections. On the contrary, Kinshasa has called for the number of the UN peacekeeping force MONUSCO in the country to be reduced by half by the end of the year. The UN has 20,000 peacekeepers in the DRC, and MONUSCO's mandate expires later this month. The global body had foreseen a cut of only 1,700 troops, citing a fragile security situation, particularly in eastern DRC. Eunice Wanjiru has been speaking to Patrice Chitera, our correspondent in Kinshasa, on why the UN thinks it still needs a huge presence in the country.
The UN is saying that the security in the DR Congo needs caution, because during the debate in New York, the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon did express some concern that the situation in the DR Congo, especially in the eastern part of the country, is volatile, with several armed groups still operating and fresh clashes between communities happening. And there is also this issue of President Kabila stepping down that could also trigger new conflicts if there is no dialogue. All those, are UN concerns, and that's why the UN is not ready really to withdraw all its troops, but the UN is ready to withdraw this year 1,700 peacekeepers.
So how are the Congolese, especially those in the eastern part of the country, reacting to this announcement?
There are mixed reactions. For people who are in eastern Congo, especially where armed groups are still carrying out killings, like in the region of Beni, people feel that the UN is not doing nothing, or peacekeepers are just watching. In the Western Congo now, the views are different from what is happening in the East, because in the West here, opinion backing the UN presence in the country, especially political parties, saying that the UN mandate be reinforced to give the UN mission more powers, but the government is saying the national army or security forces are now strong enough to fit the gap that the UN troop can leave.
DW correspondent Patrice Chitera in Kinshasa. And for further analysis on the UN-DRC spat, Eunice Wanjiru has been speaking to Christoph Vogel, a researcher at the University of Zurich in Switzerland. Vogel is also a senior fellow at the Congo Research Group, and he's been seeking to clarify the reason behind DR Congo's call to drastically reduce UN peacekeepers.
Well, the debate about the number of MONUSCO peacekeepers in the Congo already started a few years ago. So the government developed a keen interest in reducing the number of peacekeepers for probably a number of different reasons. But as we're approaching the planned dates of a national election, it seems to be more and more obvious that if elections will happen this year, the government is rather interested in not having such a big MONUSCO force in the country, given potential political trouble that may be ahead.
Okay, the DRC government's relations with MONUSCO has suffered recently. And the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Security Council, Samantha Power, said she was very concerned by this. What risks does the lack of cooperation between DRC and MONUSCO pose?
There's a number of different risks attached. Obviously, the around about 20,000 peacekeepers that are currently on post in the Congo are a vital part of the joint strategy to disarm several dozens of rebel and militia groups that are still active in the east of the country. But other than that, also, MONUSCO has been in a situation where the general security situation in the country is still not as good as it should be, has been like at least passively through its presence a stabilizing factor, especially in areas where it's most visibly deployed, so in cities like Kinshasa, Goma, Bukavu, and so on.
The UN mission which helped stabilize the DRC, you know, has been operating since 1999. Isn't it time to let the Congolese determine their own destiny?
Obviously, yes, that should be like how things move on in the Congo. On the other side, MONUSCO's own track record is a pretty mixed one. So on one side, the mission has never fully succeeded in fulfilling its mandate to protect civilians. So there has been a lot of very valid criticism, especially with the recent violence, for instance, in the Beni area in North Kivu in eastern Congo. But on the other side, MONUSCO still has played its valuable role. So all that links to a larger discussion on peacekeeping in general, whether or not it makes sense to have like such a massive and costly mission deployed that in the end has a rather limited success in terms of its mandate. And then from a more political point of view, there is obviously the question whether or not big UN peacekeeping missions should keep being in countries for such a long time, also linking up to wider dialogues or discussions about like neocolonial politics and the way the international peacekeeping system is set up. But it's definitely a mixed bag.
Okay, you had mentioned the elections. These elections are scheduled for November this year, but the chances of them taking place are growing dimmer, and the DRC government has said it doesn't want outside forces to influence its elections calendar. What do you foresee taking place, bearing in mind the political impasse in DRC?
I think we'll need to see like what the new MONUSCO mandate looks like, and that should be decided upon like in the coming weeks. Usually, it's towards the end of March that a new one-year mandate comes out from the Security Council. But in general, like it's likely that there might be some further troop reduction because that has been the trend for the last couple of years. Although there were not major reductions, just a minor one, but. Yeah, bearing in mind the increasing political tension that surrounds the scheduled elections, it's obviously a very critical juncture for the Congo right now. So the question will be whether these elections will be organized in due time and in due tranquility, or whether the country returns to the status of outright political crisis. And in that case, obviously, although the mission has been in the country for so long, it could be, again, a very important moment for international assistance and stabilization efforts.
Christoph Vogel, Senior Fellow at the Congo Research Group, speaking from the University of Zurich in Switzerland.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
An eye in the air. Cameroon's military is deploying drones to identify and target Boko Haram militants along the border with Nigeria. This comes as Nigeria's army said on Thursday it, together with Cameroonian forces, had freed more than 800 people who were being held in several villages by Boko Haram. The operations came on the same day Boko Haram abducted 16 people in Adamawa State, according to police sources and locals. In Cameroon, some of the freed captives, who include a number of teenage girls and women, have been narrating their ordeal to DW's correspondent Moki Kinzeka. He begins his report with Soldiers Return.
Cameroonian soldiers sing as they return from the Nigerian towns of Goshe and Ashigashia, where they say they joined Nigerian troops to free a number of hostages from Boko Haram captivity. With them is 42-year-old Cameroon-born businessman Minka Grégoire Sally, whom the soldiers say they freed alongside hundreds of Cameroonians and Nigerian hostages. Grégoire was held by Boko Haram for 3 weeks after the bus he was riding in was ambushed.
When we arrived in Nigeria, we were held in chains and told we would only be freed if our families or government paid $4,000 per person, or if we ourselves go out with other captives to steal and bring the money in the company of guards. We eventually escaped when the Cameroonian army attacked.
42-year-old Shakaria Habiba says she was forced out of her marital home in Ashigashia alongside dozens of women and girls by 15 heavily armed men.
I spent 10 months, 15 days with Boko Haram fighters in a bush. I was later given as the fourth wife to a Boko Haram Muslim.
Habiba, who arrived at the Minawawa refugee camp with a three-month-old baby, says there were hundreds of Cameroon and Nigerian girls in the Boko Haram hideout doing household chores and attending to the sexual needs of fighters. She says those who become pregnant are handed over to traditional birth attendants. General Jacob Koji, who is commanding Cameroon troops fighting Boko Haram, says they are handing over the freed hostages to United Nations agencies.
L'État camerounais et puis le système des Nations Unies.
The government of Cameroon and United Nations agencies have resources to take care of the health needs of the freed hostages, and they are working in collaboration with traditional rulers to bring them together.
In 2013, Nigeria reported that Boko Haram had stepped up kidnappings of young women to sell them into sexual slavery or force them to marry its fighters. The tactics attracted international outrage, but efforts to prevent more kidnappings or rescue the young girls have not been successful. The United Nations estimates that Boko Haram's six-year insurgency has killed more than 20,000 people and displaced more than 2.5 million.
Moki Kinteka reporting from Cameroon.
Human rights.
The struggle will continue. Those were the words of Ugandan opposition leader Kizza Besigye. He was addressing his supporters in a video posted on his YouTube channel more than 1 month since he was placed under house arrest. Uganda's Electoral Commission declared President Yoweri Museveni winner of the February 18th poll with 61% of the votes. Besigye, leader of the Forum for Democratic Change, FDC, had 35% of the votes. He rejected the results, but due to his house arrest, has failed to meet the deadline for filing a legal challenge. From Kampala, Alex Jita reports.
This is my home. Can I have an answer? What is all this about? Why are you on my property?
Kizza Besigye, facing off with the police who have been camping at his residence for more than a month now. Besigye contested against President Museveni for the third time in the February general elections and polled 35% to Museveni's 61%. Besigye rejected the results but could not beat the deadline to challenge the election in court. His party, the Forum for Democratic Change, announced a defiance campaign that included weekly prayers, staying away from work on Thursdays and wearing blue on Fridays. The police immediately arrested Besigye on February 18th and have kept him at his residence near Kampala with no charges brought against him. Ever since, he has not been allowed to leave his house.
I protested that I don't want my house to be turned into a prison. I have not been freed from the time I was arrested, which means I have been under detention for more than the time that is allowed by the law. I'm completely surrounded and not allowed to leave.
Human rights activists see this as a violation of his fundamental rights. Agaba Magulu is the chairperson of the Uganda Human Rights Commission.
It has taken a number of days beyond what the Constitution prescribes. We realize that it's a human rights violation, or an alleged human rights violation for that matter. with the powers of the commission and functions of the commission, we record this case, investigate it and pursue it to its logical conclusion.
Besigye, through his lawyers, reported the matter to a local court, and a judgment was due this week. However, on the day the judgment was due to be announced, Besigye's lawyers were told that a higher court had taken his case file. No reason was given for this development, and no new date was given for the continuation of the case. David Impanga is Besigye's lawyer.
What is strange is the speed with which the application for review was made. If you're a fan of conspiracy theories, you might think that in fact somebody is trying very hard to ensure that this matter is not heard.
Uganda's Internal Affairs Minister, Rose Akol, was put to task by a parliamentary committee this week to explain Besigye's continued detention. She told the committee that security had information that Besigye intended to disorganize the capital city. President Yoweri Museveni told reporters that he was contacted by a number of diplomats on the issue, including U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry.
Those Europeans, they are not serious. I tell them politely, even Mr. John Kerry rang me and I told him, no, don't worry, we are experts here in managing all those things. Don't have to worry. Now, handling Besigye cannot be allowed to disturb our peace. Now, the other time we went to invade a police house.
Various international human rights bodies and foreign governments have asked the government of Uganda to formally charge Besigye in the courts of law or leave his house and he regains his freedom. Those calls have not been answered and there appears to be no end in sight regarding this issue.
Alex Jita in Kampala. Now, as Christians around the world prepare to celebrate Easter, a debate about the proliferation of churches is heating up in Ghana. Many of these churches are not properly regulated, and there have been allegations of pastors carrying out fake miracles. As Isaac Kalechi reports, Ghanaians are worried not only about the mushrooming of these churches, but also the noise that they make.
A pastor leading his congregation in prayers inside a church located in the southern part of Accra. One needs not to look far to find a church. In Ghana, it is estimated that more than 100 churches can be found per district. In some of them, like this one, congregants are always excited, but the proliferation of churches is beginning to dominate discussions. As of 2014, there were more than 10,000 churches. Some residents are now complaining about the constant services and prayer meetings next to their houses. Some of the churches without proper structures have resorted to using educational facilities like classrooms for their operations. Such facilities end up being destroyed. The Church of Pentecost has several branches dotted across the country and usually conducts some of its services in such classrooms. Its national chairman, Apostle Dr. Opoku Enyina, doesn't consider the use of classrooms for church services wrong.
Sometimes in some places, some chairs and tables are broken down, some classrooms become dirty. On the other hand, there are some places that some churches pay for using such classrooms, and some of them maintain the chairs and tables that are broken down. Some of them have to do renovation. From my perspective, it's very good for the schools.
A pastor sharing a prophecy with a congregant predicting doom. It is common to hear such messages which focus mainly on miracles and prosperity. Many of these churches have large members, but inexperienced pastors with little or no theological knowledge. Ghana's former president, Jerry Rawlings, is perplexed and disturbed by what he sees happening in some churches.
If people like that can display for our people, and we can behave in such an ignorant manner, should it surprise you that the country is being consumed in so much filth?
Only a few denominations in Ghana belong to an association. This makes regulating the other so-called independent churches difficult. The General Secretary of the Christian Council of Ghana, which is one of the recognized association of churches, Reverend Dr. Opone Frimpong, concedes the church has issues with regulation.
So yes, there are challenges in the church, but it's not like let's do church. You know, we live in a country, the church is situated in a nation. So the church cannot just be inward looking. We have challenges, so let's solve our challenges. While we do that, we must also be as relevant as anything.
Ghana's constitution allows for freedom of worship, and no religious grouping can be forced to belong to an association. That means the frustrations of the many Ghanaians and city authorities may not change anytime soon unless the law changes.
And that report was compiled by Isaac Kalechi in Accra.
Your say.
Time now to hear what you had to say about some of the stories we've covered for you in this edition of Africa Link over the past week. With this week's Your Say, here is Abubakar Jallo and Joan Okitoi.
And we kick off this week's listener's feedback on a joyful note from Masi Katini in Mombasa, Kenya. Masi wrote to tell us what she thinks about the Africa Link show that went on air on Monday this week. And over to you, Joan.
I enjoyed the program today, Mercy said. I commend your ability to cram a lot of information into just 25 minutes. The subject matter was insightful, informative, and more importantly, unbiased, which is what good journalism is all about. I also particularly liked how the drama series Crime Fighters is used to highlight social ills and challenges without being too somber, but leaves you thinking about the lessons to be learned in your current social setting. Please keep covering more stories on women's sexual and reproductive health issues from across the continent. Thank you and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you for that response, Marcy.
And now onto our coverage on the attacks in the Belgian capital, Brussels.
Aliyu Mohammed from Nigeria said he thinks world leaders need to work together to fight their common enemy, which is the so-called Islamic State. The brutality of IS threatens not only a certain region or a country, but also the very peace of the world, he said.
Usman Afan from Nigeria responded to our online article entitled, What is the role of France in West Africa?
I think the question was supposed to be, what is the role of France in Francophone Africa? Usman said, it's clear that France is only involved in their former colonies. For example, France does not have any forces stationed in Nigeria, where the Boko Haram insurgency is currently ongoing. Instead, French troops are stationed in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Cameroon. France is in West Africa only to keep its own interests safe, Usman said.
And now on to one of the stories that's been trending since last week.
Yes, Gupta Gate. Did South African ministers in the President Jacob Zuma's government buy themselves into power?
That's a question we asked on our Facebook page.
And Usman Mohammed, also from Nigeria, said it wasn't right that Zuma still remains president after his shameful acts.
And newly elected president of football's world governing body FIFA, Gianni Infantino, visited war-torn South Sudan on Wednesday to watch the Africa Cup of Nations qualifier between the world's newest nation and Benin.
Rasun Gongo from Tanzania said he agreed that football could help return calm and normalcy to South Sudan. Football provides employment for young people and enhances friendships among the players, he said.
That's all we have time for.
And until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Kanda Bongoman during his heydays with the song Moni, ending this week's Your Say. It was presented by Abubakar Jallo and Joan Okitoi. If you'd like to comment on our programs or on stories on our website, dw.com/Africa, then do send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com. A letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. That's DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Or an SMS to country code 49160957595510. And now a reminder of our main stories. The UN has said the Democratic Republic of Congo is at a critical juncture as Kinshasa calls for halving the size of the UN peacekeeping force by the end of the year. Cameroon has deployed drones as it seeks to target Boko Haram militants in the border region with Nigeria. We've also been hearing about the house arrest of Uganda's opposition leader, Kizza Besigye. And that does it for this show. From me, Crispin Mwakideu, good Friday and a very happy Easter weekend.